You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
If you can remember all the way back to January when we started this series, you'll recognize this verse. Jesus has just informed the disciples that he's going to suffer and die, and then comes our passage for today, a kind of warning about the cost of discipleship. Now, some Christians point to this verse as a proof text that Jesus expects us to literally suffer and die a painful death to prove our allegiance to him. Obviously, this isn't very attractive material for the church's promotional brochure. Come suffer and die like Jesus. But I think there are elements of this passage which we do have to take seriously. Over the course of the last 6 months, Kurt Struckmeyer has led us in exploring the difference between the gospel about Jesus and the gospel of Jesus. The gospel about Jesus is the version of Christianity practiced by the vast majority of churches around the world. They emphasize sin and forgiveness and believing things about Jesus. On the other hand, the gospel of Jesus emphasizes doing the things Jesus did, advocating for the dispossessed, calling out injustice, and overturning a table or two. But however you slice it, doing what Jesus did has nothing to do with being nice or being respected by the community. It's about living a life that many perceive as threatening to the status quo, to one's sense of security, or to one's grip on power. So, when you're listening to our passage today, pay close attention to the actions we're called to. Deny yourself. Take up your cross. When? Daily. And follow. Yikes, not a word about belief or sin or forgiveness. Just a demand that threatens our assumptions and calls into question what most people think following Jesus is really about.
Our words of wisdom are from Luke 9, verse 23.
Then he said to them all, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me."
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
On June 30th, 1859, the rope was in position, and at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, Charles Blondin started a trip that was to make history. The heart-stopping stunt of being the first person to walk a tightrope over the roaring waters of Niagara Falls. Incredulous spectators watched him stop midway and lower a line from the tightrope to the Maid of the Mist floating below. Then he pulled up a bottle of champagne, sat down, and refreshed himself. Then, continuing his ascent toward the Canadian shore, he paused, steadied the balancing pole, and suddenly executed a back somersault. Never content to merely repeat his last performance, subsequent crossings were done on a bicycle, while walking blindfolded, pushing a wheelbarrow, and once even made the trip with his hands and feet manacled. Yet, even these stunts failed to satisfy Blondin's urge to test himself. There's an apocryphal story that has Blondin addressing the crowd. "Do you believe I can carry a person across in this wheelbarrow?" And everyone heartily cheered their approval. But when he asked for a volunteer, the crowd went silent. No one stepped forward. While they loved the thrill of the spectacle, no one was willing to actually risk his or her own life to be a part of it. It's one thing to believe. It's another thing to take a risk and take action based on that belief. The act of following Jesus, no matter where it leads, is the essence of a life of discipleship. And if you're genuinely following Jesus, you can expect to be taking risks. The risk of being on a journey that anticipates radical change, the risk of going beyond familiar places, and the risk of finding oneself in situations that are outside one's comfort zone. All along the way, people who aspire to follow Jesus discover that capabilities and talents never previously realized are drawn to the surface. It's a journey of lifelong learning, change, and adaptation on the move. If it hasn't fully sunk in over the course of the last 6 months, collusion in this conspiracy of love necessarily makes you a troublemaker, a revolutionary, and a seeker of change. It calls one to be an agent of transformation, or as Jesus said, to be like a mustard seed in a tiny garden, a pinch of yeast in a large bowl of dough, or a lamp in a darkened room. This way of Jesus is a long and winding path toward a vision of the way the world ought to be, the way the world is meant to be. And it comes with two guarantees. It's not without risk, and there's never an assurance of success. Woohoo! Right? Wow! Wouldn't it just be easier to go back to the way it was? I mean, believing stuff is a whole lot easier than doing stuff. Well, sure, but only if you want to be a part of the problem. It's like that moment in the movie The Matrix, where the rebel leader Morpheus offers Neo the choice between a red pill or a blue pill. The red pill represents breaking away from the status quo, freeing Neo from the way things used to be and opening his eyes to see the way things really are. Or take the blue pill, and as Morpheus says, you wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. Jesus is offering you a red pill. Follow me, he says. You'll have to deny what you've thought you've known up to this point. It'll be rough. And as Jesus says in Luke 9, don't look back. Once you've put your hand on the plow of this conspiracy, keep looking straight ahead. It'll be tempting to look back when the church had influence, and being a Christian meant you were a respected member of society. Back in the day, women and minorities knew their place. There was no such thing as gays, and you could live your whole life without meeting a Muslim, let alone having one move in next door. Everybody knew that all Christians believe the same thing, except those Catholics. They're not really Christians. And that somebody is bound to dig up Noah's Ark and prove that the Bible is totally true, if only we look hard enough. If that's what you're looking for, it's the blue pill for you. On the other hand, the red pill will open your eyes to the fact that the genuine way of Jesus is and always has been a conspiracy. From the very beginning, it was a small movement that sought to subvert the normality of civilization and the prevailing domination systems of society. Jesus was a malcontent. He called for economic justice. He shared meals with outcasts and the unclean rabble. He responded to injustice with creative nonviolence. He led demonstrations in the streets and was executed for daring to challenge the status quo. This is a Jesus that has been toned down in favor of an otherworldly warrior fighting to defeat cosmic forces and a saccharine sweet proponent of an inward spiritual journey of purity and right belief. The real Jesus was in a confrontation with the real world, standing up to violence, poverty, disease, abuse of power, and injustice. that Jesus calls us to be a part of the journey that leads to the realization of a better world. To follow Jesus is about being on a journey of transformation that moves one from self-centered concern to a commitment to the common good of all, of moving from captivity to our culture to a life that challenges the inertia of the status quo. Following Jesus means not only extending oneself to help one's neighbors, but seeking to love one's enemies. Crazy, right? Look, I get it. It's naive to think that we can end poverty, violence, and injustice in the world. Jesus couldn't do it. There's no way we're going to change the hearts and values of all those who are determined to hate, discriminate, and push back against the values we embrace. Jesus failed here, too. But we can do some things. We can speak out on behalf of the voiceless and stand in solidarity with them. We can participate in movements of resistance and liberation. That's what Jesus did. He held up a vision of how things ought to be. He pointed out the distance between that vision and reality, and then he took action. He was what we would call today a change agent, and we can be that too. In the closing chapter of A Conspiracy of Love, Kurt Struckmeyer suggests a few simple steps to get you started on this path. Number one, observe. Look around and see what the needs are. Identify with people who are hurting and suffering. Number two, reflect. Meditate, read, think, talk, journal. Ask yourself, what is your heart calling you to do? And finally, act. Start small. Do something. Observe, reflect, and act. That's it. But do something. Edward Everett Hale, a 19th century Unitarian minister, put it very clearly. I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do something I can do. Dorothy Day, the radical Roman Catholic social activist, wrote, "Young people say, what good can one person do? What is the sense of our small effort? They can't see that we must lay one brick at a time, take one step at a time. We can be responsible only for the action of the present moment, but we can beg for an increase of love in our hearts that will vitalize and transform all our individual actions and know that God will take them and multiply them as Jesus multiplied the loaves and fishes. One brick at a time, one step at a time, one something at a time. That's what being a part of Jesus' conspiracy of love is all about. Taking a risk to answer the call to live out the gospel of Jesus instead of just settling for the gospel about Jesus. I get it. It's risky. It requires a certain boldness that some of you might not feel is right for you. But as Mike Iaconelli used to say, boldness doesn't mean rude, obnoxious, loud, or disrespectful. Being bold is being firm, sure, confident, fearless, daring, strong, resilient, and not easily intimidated. It means you're willing to go where you've never been, willing to try what you've never tried, and willing to trust what you've never trusted. Boldness is quiet, not noisy. You can do this. We've been talking about it for months. So don't let it be something we've just talked about. Observe, reflect, and act. Following Jesus, I mean really following Jesus, is a choice. It takes risk. You may have to be bold. And as Yak used to say, boldness isn't something you're born with. You either choose it or you don't. Red pill or blue pill? Risk or comfort? Bold or timid? Do you climb into Blondin's wheelbarrow or not? Jesus said, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. You either choose it or you don't." Once upon a time, a chickadee was sitting on a branch chatting with a dove. There was a winter chill in the air, and it looked like snow was not far off. After a lull in the conversation, the chickadee asked the dove, "Tell me, do you know the weight of a snowflake?" The dove considered it for a moment and answered, "Nothing more than nothing." Delighted, the chickadee said, "In that case, I must tell you a marvelous story. One day, when it began to snow, I was sitting on the branch of a tree close to its trunk. It wasn't a raging blizzard, no. It was so still and quiet, like a dream. Since I didn't have anything else to do, I decided to count the snowflakes settling on the twigs and branch. Their number was exactly 3,741,952. Then, when the very next snowflake dropped onto the branch, nothing more than nothing, as you say, the branch broke off. That said, the chickadee flew away. The dove, since Noah's time and authority on matters of peace, thought to herself, 3,741,952 nothings. Perhaps all that's needed for peace to break out in the world is the weight of one more person's voice. You may think your participation in the conspiracy is too small or insignificant to make any difference, but at the right time, and with the accumulated efforts of all that has come before, there's no telling what a difference you can make. Be bold. Take a risk. Jesus is calling you to follow. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.wepuTLoveFirst.org.